Hey, welcome back to Kingdom Refresh. We're going to talk more about our Kingdom Clarity series going on right now. We just finished Matthew 5, 27 through 30. If you've been following along in the devotional, everything should have been along those lines. And we're just kind of excited to get together and chat. We got Bobby here this week.
Bobby.
If your white balance is off, it's his fault. If any of you actually know what white balance is. But yeah, that's fine. Also, I wore my shirt because today is Star Wars Day.
It is Star Wars Day.
Just saying. And I'm probably very deep into one of the films right now.
May the fourth be with you.
May the fourth.
For the fourth.
That's how...
And then tomorrow's Revenge of the Sith.
No.
Revenge of the Fifth. I'm kidding. I'm just really trying to get under your skin.
I hate that because it's Cinco de Mayo.
It is Cinco de Mayo.
And then you have Revenge of the Sixth.
That would be better, actually.
Makes so much sense, and yeah. I don't know who decided that it was the other way, but
Revenge of the Sixth.
Yeah, because after Cinco de Mayo...
Because Sith and Sixth.
Revenge of the Sixth.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. And depending on the amount of tacos you ate... Probably some revenge.
There's gonna be some revenge for sure.
Speaking of that, I don't know. It might be that way for us from the next gen worship night.
Yeah, because the next gen worship night is
tomorrow, right?
Yes, tomorrow. Yeah. Tomorrow. I forgot we could plug those things on here.
Yeah. So if you are a next gen, whatever that means to you, come out and worship.
Yeah, we're gonna have coffee and tacos because it's Cinco de Mayo.
Mm-hmm. So that starts at 6 p.m. and then the worship starts at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
And it's going to be good.
And if you're watching this after Sunday, I'm sorry you missed it.
If you're watching, yes. If you're watching after Sunday, don't come here Monday expecting tacos.
Oh, man. Okay. So I don't know. Have we received any questions or anything from these past few messages?
No, I am so clear delivery of God's word.
You have done so well that people nobody... Like,
no further questions.
Yeah.
Bible understood.
Yeah. Maybe they're scared.
Actually, I did... We got a... Yes, I did get a question.
Okay.
At our staff meeting yesterday. We actually had a long discussion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At our staff meeting yesterday. Like, we had a staff meeting and then, like, probably 20, 30 minutes of just talking about the subject at hand, which is really good. Something I've been really blessed by is... just people really resonating with the message from Sunday in different ways, in ways that I didn't expect. Actually, I went into Hawthorne and my buddy Derek, he's like, hey, thanks for the message on Sunday. We watched online. And he had a totally separate take from what somebody else told me. And, you know, this idea of lust, we tend to think of it as like only sexual desire, which in the context of what Jesus is saying, it certainly is that. But there are other scriptures that, you know, the lusts of the flesh are more than just sexual desire. We greed after money. We want to attain more power. We lust for that turns into dangerous covetousness, you know. So there's a lot of lust of the flesh. And I think somebody had mentioned to us in the staff meeting that she's like, yeah, I mean, my lusts are... you know, a lifestyle. You know, I'm fixated on things that I shouldn't be fixated on, and I let that corrupt my desires in my heart. And I thought, well, that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
You know, just to see how God's word is hitting different people's lives and hearts. That's why discussions are good. Having small groups of people to get together with. I stopped in to the Bible recap study that happens here with the ladies. There was a bunch of discussion about what they're studying and stuff, and then it kind of tied into what we were talking about on Sunday. And you know, so it's good. The whole purpose of discipleship is, well, the root word there is discipline. And, but be disciplined in the word, together, you know, the Greek word koinonia, you know, spending time together, eating together, fellowshipping together, and then discussing the scriptures together is a really important thing to do. So if you don't have that in your life, it'll be a good thing to find. And then we're going to help you do that as time progresses in the fall here, we're formulating more and more opportunities for us to be together.
Yeah. Or come on the podcast and we'll roast you.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the hot seat.
Speaking of that, Bobby, okay. There's some specific list of things that I need to address. No, I'm just kidding. So I just kind of came up with a few questions, kind of get some discussion. So obviously we've kind of defined lust, but why do we feel like it is something that is important to address in the church? I mean, obviously it's direct from scripture, but why should we address it? Why should we not shy away from speaking on it?
You know, it seems like if you read through the scriptures, especially the epistles, sexual immorality is always at the forefront when talking about sin. If they're listing sins, it's going to be fornicators, sexually immoral. The Greek word there is porneia, which is where we get our word. Are we allowed to say that on social media?
Pornography?
Cornography.
Corn.
just to make sure we don't get
demonetized.
Well, we're not monetized. I don't know.
It's like, what are we going to do? Get demonetized?
I watch YouTube videos all the time and they don't ever say it. So yeah. I'm like, I don't know if we're allowed to say it. But anyway, that's where we get that word. But it doesn't simply mean what we see it to mean in our context. It's any kind of sexual impropriety. So there's a lot of ways that porneia will be played out. It could be in lusts of the heart. It could be, sex outside of the context of a godly marriage, a biblical marriage. It could be looking at things that you're not supposed to look at. People don't realize how close to the American culture the early church was and the ancient world was. In fact, far beyond in a lot of ways. If you ever get a chance to go to like the ancient ruins of Ephesus, you think it's going to be like such a biblical, nice experience. But we went to Ephesus and like literally above like every other door was a phallic symbol. And that was a place you could go to, you know, pornia, basically. That was it. There were statues. Everything was very sexually charged in their imagery and stuff like this. That's just the way the culture was. We went and stood in the ruins of Corinth, which you would think would be like this huge city. It's this tiny little footprint. You can walk it. It's smaller than Carlinville. And you go to the ruins of Corinth and, you know, so much sexual immorality was happening there in Corinth. And so much time is spent by Paul calling them out and calling them to holiness over it. And so people might look at the Bible and be like, why is God so obsessed? And I've heard this. Why is God so obsessed with sex? I'm like, he's not. We are. And because we are, he has to call us out for it. And so that's why we see a lot of that in the scriptures play out the way that it does.
Well, I think it's funny because like we talk a lot about what our current culture looks like and, oh, it's gotten so far away from whatever. And, you know, when you look at the biblical times and historically, it's probably about the same. Mm-hmm. I would say just like it looks different now, mm-hmm. but I mean, you had like specific places where it was altars that like that was what they were for, was mm-hmm. public, like sexual immorality, things like that. Like, so it's not necessarily different now. Like it just looks different. There's more, you know, more access to things differently or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rome was terrible.
Yeah. I'd also like to point out, I actually just saw this quote from Vodi Bakum just earlier, where, you know, he mentions how the wisest man in the world, Solomon, you know, he fell into sexual sin, how mm-hmm. the strongest man of the world, Samson, fell into sexual sin, the godliest man in the Bible, David, fell into sexual sin. Yeah. And so for us to think that, you know, we couldn't be susceptible to that, you know, are we going to say we're wiser than Solomon or stronger than Samson or godlier than David?
Yes.
I mean, it's something that
we're more humble than Adam.
Yeah.
Adam. More humble than Adam.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah. It's the condition and it's the result of, you know, sin. I mean, all sin is just missing the mark, and God has created this beautiful thing to be shared in the context of a marriage. And it also has a purpose. And even we've kind of, if anything that we've added to the list of improprieties in our modern culture that wasn't as prevalent in the ancient culture. It is removing the necessity of intimacy in order to proliferate our species, right? To have kids and to increase God's glory. We've taken it and made it, we call it dark web, you know, and make it all of our identity, basically. Like, this is like all that we care about. It's all we talk about. Every TV show, I feel like every TV show, even Bluey now, no, I was kidding. It doesn't do that, but it like puts it at the forefront. Like, this is the main thing of life. I remember in the 90s, like that was all those TV shows were about, is who is the hookup culture, you know, all that kind of stuff like that. Because we've removed the sacredness of childbearing from the public discourse. I mean, I think most millennials, and that's us, right? Mm-hmm. I would imagine. Please say you're a millennial. You guys are millennials,
yes,
too.
Right?
Yeah, us. Whippersnippers are getting married later, are opting to not have kids, are basically using intimacy as just merely a source of pleasure, as opposed to a source of it's all gratification instead of glorification of God. And it's hard to even think about it sometimes. Like, we those who've grown up in purity culture, it's like to think that it has any place in worship, it has any place in a relationship with God, it makes you feel icky, because the world has completely hijacked it.
This one's kind of fun. Basically reflecting on your own life, and in what ways have you struggled with controlling lustful thoughts or actions? So kind of getting personal here. I mean, I can start. It's probably seventh grade. That was when my like addiction to pornography, I don't know if that's how I have to say it, like started, and it like became a very strong controlling entity in my life all throughout high school. And so that was something that I actually went through the Celebrate Recovery program with because of that. And it helped, obviously, but there's still that level of temptation that you're always going to deal with in those regards. And so I hate when you say like controlling, because you really can never control it. Like, it's not something that you can ever control. You can keep it at bay, and you can, you know, but I feel like it is very difficult to, especially those thoughts, it's very difficult to just like completely stop them cold turkey. You know what I'm saying? I guess it could be controlling in the sense that you have to control those things. You have to be in charge of your eyes. You know, one of the things that I read, which probably wasn't necessarily at the level I should have read it, but I felt like my struggles with it was Every Man's Battle. And I think that if you're somebody that's struggling with that stuff, it is a great book, because it really reveals the nature of everything. Mm-hmm. And things like, you know, Job is one of my favorite biblical figures. Like, reading through the things that he was struggling with gave me a little endurance, I guess, of like, I can do this, I can fight, you know. That's kind of where where a lot of that happened for me. Not that it's still not a struggle, but it was controlling my life. Like, it was a very real problem.
Yeah. You know, I'm just, because I'm an older millennial, maybe, I count myself so fortunate that I didn't have a smartphone in my pocket and I didn't have high-speed internet. We were generally not the most wealthy family anyway, so we had dial-up internet. And I remember the day we got 56K modem, and I was like, we're going to be able to see pictures on websites now. We're going to have enough power to, and then like, you go to a website and it's like,
line by line.
So like, that window was never open to me as a kid. And then I got married young. I was 18 when I got married, you know, and Paul says in 1 Corinthians, that's, you know, it's better to be married than to burn with youthful lust. And certainly for me, that was a good thing. I'm not saying you just get married so you can satisfy that urge, but I am saying that there is a lot of wisdom to that. And so I just count myself fortunate that, you know, I think, I don't know if I mentioned it on Sunday, but, you know, in junior high, the big day was when a kid brought a Playboy magazine to school, mm-hmm. and then he hid it under the trash can at the school. And then the whole day, boys were like, can I go to the bathroom?
go to the trash can. Like,
man, kids are going to the bathroom a lot today.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is. And there's something about that. In just one generation, we've gone from hiding it under a trash can. It belongs in the trash can, but hiding under a trash can and having to go to something and look at it to, it's on our phones. It's controlling our lives. It's far beyond just photos on a page. It's a poison of the mind. And it's just really sad. I sat with a guy and I counseled a guy. He was 15 and he had an addiction to that stuff. And he said it started at 9 years old. My son's going to be 9 soon. And I pray every day and I just want to keep him in that innocent spot. We were even watching The Lorax the other day and there's like a little part where the guy likes the girl. And he's like, it comes on that part. He goes, all right. And he walks away and I'm like, Brendan, where are you going? He goes, I don't like this part. And we were on the plane and he was watching a show and it has a little part where it comes up. He takes the headphones off. I'm like, why are you doing that, Brendan? He's like, I don't like this part. Mm. You know, anything romantic. I'm like, okay, please keep that innocence. Please, yeah. As much as we can. And the sad thing is the culture will say that you're stunting his development. Mm. And it's just not true. You are stifling and corrupting your development by allowing yourself to be introduced to these things at such a young age. And so for me, it was different avenues. But, you know, honestly, my mom had like Victoria's Secret catalogs just like laying around the house, like Cosmo and like all these magazines laying around the house. And so, you know, it's a different delivery device nowadays. It's honestly just a worse drug, a more potent drug nowadays, yeah. But it's always kind of existed. And being a guy, keeping yourself pure in a culture that doesn't value at all purity is such a difficult thing. And so for me, just getting married really young, like that's what I did.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can definitely relate. Pornography was something, you know, I, used to struggle with as well. And it really can have such a hold on you. I'm not a scientist. I don't remember the words, but there's something like, I remember doing the research on it and it, releases these like endorphins or whatever in your brain, you know, there's a sense of pleasure that comes with it and it can get to a point where,
serotonin.
Whatever. I don't know. You can make
up
a word.
Say it releases dolphins into your brain?
I don't know. You can just make up a word. I'd be like, yeah, sure. That's it. Yeah. But it can get to a point where it is as addictive as cocaine and it actually like literally changes your brain. Mm-hmm. And so it can really have a stronghold. And
well, that's what I think, you know, cause all my years doing recovery ministry and stuff, like what the problem is that we don't realize is that these chemicals in your brain, the way that drugs affect are the same ways that other things affect. So if it for you is stealing or, you know, I mean, God forbid, like arson or something, mm-hmm. like it all is the same chemicals. So your addiction, like their addiction is to the feeling of a drug, but the feeling is done in your brain by the same chemicals that it would be for anything else. And so it becomes just as addicting as anything else. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, why do you need to recover from that? Or why, you know, why do you need to go to a program like Celebrate Recovery? Well, it's because you're addicted. It mm-hmm. is addicting and really anything can be addicting. Mm-hmm. And you know, I used to talk about like anything can really become a problem, even scripture in the sense that you can be so like, I want to study, but you're not in the relationship, you know, mm-hmm. like, you're like, I know everything. I know every line of word, but you haven't talked to God in, you know, 5 years. Like, so it's like this, like there are ways that we can dive into something so much that it becomes this, like this addiction for us, or church becomes, you know, something mm-hmm. where it's not, you're not getting anything out of it, but you go because it makes you feel good, you know?
one of the earliest heresies, in fact, probably the earliest heresies, was Gnosticism, which was, the Greek word gnosis means knowledge. It was the addiction to knowledge, to the higher knowledge, the higher things that corrupted scripture so much. And then Paul writes against it in, I think, Galatians and also in 2 Corinthians. You know, we destroy the proud obstacles that men build up in their minds. It's not simply just bad actors. It's sometimes Christians that, again, value and fixate on the wrong thing. Like we mentioned before, it's like the lusts of the heart. Sometimes the knowledge we think gives us power, and so we just thirst after the knowledge instead of letting God's word sit on our heart and change the way that we think. We want to force it into the minds of others so they think how we think instead of how God wants them to think.
Yeah, and I think, too, this is kind of controversial in the sense that I feel like a lot of the blame has been on women in the sense that, like, it was always, well, you need to wear a shirt because the men are, you need to whatever. But I think we need to realize that we are also the problem. And the other thing that, you know, my wife and I have talked about, like, because you go to youth camps and stuff and it's like, well, the girls need to wear a shirt, the whatever, but
the guys don't have to.
Yeah, but the, the girls are just as,
what the heck, dude,
have just as much,
I agree,
like, lust in their heart that a man does. It and it might maybe control us more, but that doesn't mean that they're not struggling as
not
much.
Not if it's
and
me.
So, but, you know, so
it's, you think his head's blinding? I don't wear shorts for a reason. I don't want to blind everybody.
But, you know, it's this thing where, like, I feel like we need to, because the thing that I've always said is, like, in my mind, if I am looking for that lustful, like, release, I don't care what a woman is wearing, whether it's a trash bag or, you know, something, whatever. It's, I'm going to find that. And that, it's the same exact thing with drugs and other things. Like, we will find what we're looking for. If we are looking to lust, we will find it. We will find some semblance of something. And so a lot of it, which kind of goes along with this next question, is, you know, what are some practical steps that you can guard your mind against lustful thoughts? It takes you changing your mind. It takes you, like, reframing things in your brain.
Yeah, you really do. We all have daughters. That'll change you real quick.
Yeah.
When you have a daughter, that'll change you real quick. And I remember watching early on this presentation by a former corn producer who had turned a believer. And he was explaining and detailing what they do to basically trick women into getting into this business. Like, they'll put out, like, a modeling agency ad and say, come and, you know, oh, I want to be a model, or you want to be an actor? Okay. And then they'll get them. And then he said there was just moments where they'd stop a take and this young woman was in the fetal position crying. And it's just like, here's your $100, you know? And after listening to a series of those interviews with that guy, it's kind of like, you know, if you see a video of McDonald's nuggets being made, you're like, that, I never want McDonald's nuggets ever again. Once you realize that it's not just, it's exploitation. It's brainwashing. It is not for your enjoyment. You're watching the suffering, like the literal suffering of another human being. And then to put on top of that, like, I have a daughter that will one day be that age and be susceptible to that type of thing. That's when you start training your desires away to be repulsed by those things as opposed to, like, to embrace those things, right? It's really sad.
Yeah.
So it is better to train your desires than it is to tame your desires. I think that's one of the points from the message. In fact, I know it was because I have the notes right here. There's a song by Hozier, and it's called Arsonist's Lullaby. Of course it is. And he said, there's a line in it, and he says, don't you ever tame your demons, but always keep them on a leash. And I thought, that's very interesting. Now, he's saying it as a way to weaponize it later. Like, don't become, you know, a soft version of yourself. Don't tame your demons, because then you might need them one day. But I think that's, it kind of applies here. Don't you ever try to tame your desires, but keep them on a leash. Leash train them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if my dog's out, you know, pulling me, you know, that's one thing. But as soon as I call Caesar, the dog whisperer guy, whatever, what's that guy's name? Caesar, not Romero, that's the Joker. Caesar Chavez? No, that's not it either. You don't want that guy. he could tame your desires too. Whatever. Caesar Ramon?
Remove your desires.
Anyway, you want the dog whisperer in there. Yeah. And then you want to be in charge. You want to be the leader of the pack. That dog's gonna follow you no matter where you are. So don't you ever tame your demons. Always keep them on a leash.
So this one's a really good one. How can accountability and community support help individuals overcome struggles with lust?
I think start off, you know, if you can find someone that, you know, has struggled with the same things that you've struggled with or are struggling with, but is further along in that path, you know, they can kind of help you walk through that. Just, you know, all the struggles they've went through, what helped them, but also just the openness to be able to share. Like, hey, you know, I slipped up here, I messed up here. Just really helps a lot, because when you're on your own and you're by yourself, I feel like it's next to impossible to really recover or to really, you know, get to a place where, you know, that is God honoring, mm-hmm. you know, if you're really struggling with that kind of desire.
Well, I think too, because I think the biggest thing with accountability is the idea that somebody is going to ask. You know, so when you have somebody that you know is going to text you today and say, hey, how did it go? Sometimes just that simple fact, and it's not like, man, I'm going to disappoint them, but it's just the idea that somebody is going to be accountable to me, and I'm going to have to say, man, I screwed up. Now, the best thing about the accountability is when you do screw up, having that person there to say, it's okay. Like, let's move again. You know, and again, kind of talking about, you know, with the recovery stuff, like when you do relapse, a lot of times you get in your head, like, I've already done it. So let me just, you know, crash the plane, not land the plane. And you know, the idea is that one small slip up is not, you're not far gone. You're not lost again. And even if you do get lost again, you can still find a path back. And if you have those people that are accountable, they're going to say, hey, how's it going? Hey, I haven't talked to you in a while. Yeah. What's going on?
Mm-hmm. Or that's what shame does to you, right?
Yeah.
It makes you want to withdraw. Yeah. You know, I messed up, so I'm not going to talk to him. And then I'm never going to talk to him because I don't want to feel that shame.
Yeah.
And so to your point, having somebody that's discipling you, that's not going to cast shame, but is going to be open enough to say, yeah, no, dude, I get it.
Yeah, and there are tools specifically, you know, I know we've been talking about Korn a lot, but there are tools like XXX Church and things like that, Covenant Eyes, that you can put on your computer, and they won't necessarily block things, but what they will do is, if Bobby's my accountability partner, he gets an email of my search history. And so the idea is that accountability of... and I know people that have done it with their wife. Like, my wife will get a blank of all of that stuff that I've looked at, and then she can confront me about it or whatever.
Covenant Eyes is a great, it's just such a, and I've been an accountability partner on those things, and it works.
One of the other things too, that, I was told, I can't remember what it was, but they were like, set your home page to the Bible.
Mm.
So that as soon as you open it, it goes straight to scripture, and then you're like,
yeah,
maybe I shouldn't do that.
Yeah,
or it gets you reading or whatever,
or just put a cute baby like that on there.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, like, even when I'm like angry, I'm gonna go text somebody, I'm like,
oh,
it's okay, she's so cute.
Are there any specific triggers or patterns in your life that led you to struggle?
Any specific triggers or patterns? It's good. It's a good question.
I mean, I feel like the spiral conversation, like, you make one choice and you allow yourself to go, you know, you give yourself leeway to say, all right, well, I've already screwed up, so why not, you know?
I think I stomped it into the ground during the message, but I don't like the beach, you know? Yeah. And those are just places that, and because no matter where you look, no matter what you do, and the same kind of goes for like Las Vegas. Like, it's a pretty wicked place. There's some cheap hotels and stuff, and we've been there and we've gone there, and it is always an uncomfortable place for me to be. I just, you know, because I don't want to be drawn into anything. I don't want to have anything that corrupts me. And so if I could just remove myself from those situations, I just generally will. It, like I said in the message, it will cost you strength. If your right eye offends, or your right hand or your right eye offends you, cut it off and throw it away. And basically, like, yeah, it will cost you strength. You're not going to be able to enjoy certain things. And again, that might not be a problem for you. But if it is a problem for you, it's better to enter the kingdom having never surfed a wave than to not enter the kingdom at all. Mm-hmm. It's better to enter the kingdom, not have ever been able to see the Blue Man Group or Cirque du Soleil or whatever, than to not enter at all, or to have to stand for account for things that followed. Again, I'm not saying these places in and of themselves is bad, but it's a very food sacrifice to idols kind of thing. And, you know, Paul tackles that, you know, because in the early church, Christians were going to the meat market and getting the discounted meat because the priests would sell meat for cheap that was sacrificed to pagan idols. And then other Christians were like, they're eating tainted meat that was sacrificed to idols. And Paul's like, it doesn't matter. Those gods aren't real. Get your cheap meat. But for the weaker brother, or if it's sin to you, don't do it. And I think a lot of us will be a little loose with our promotion of certain things at the expense of our brothers and sisters. For instance, there's a lot of movies that I would take, or TV shows that I would take the liberty of watching. But if I then go and constantly push someone else to go and watch those movies, make them feel bad because they haven't watched those movies or seen those TV shows, not realizing that maybe there's something in those shows that they really struggle with, that's not a good thing either. And so it's not about beating people over the head with what might cause you to sin. It's removing it from your life so that you don't sin.
Yeah, and I think the blame kind of conversation too, like we need to say it's me, like I am the problem. Mm-hmm. I need to fix this. Mm-hmm. Not, well, they did it to me because they were whatever. It's always you. Yes, there might be parts that are causing things, but you need to take action and say, like, I'm the problem. I need to fix this. I need to do something. Which kind of brings us to, you know, kind of one of the last questions. You know, so what are some victories or strategies that have helped you overcome these kind of thoughts in your specific life? You know, I talked about, like, every man's battle. There are some things in there that are practical steps, practical strategies. I can't remember, but it is like the avert your eyes conversation kind of thing. And, you know, they use the Job passage, you know, like, and there are some things in there, and I'm sure there are other strategies. You know, obviously you have things like covenant eyes that are kind of hardware, like things that will help. But again, I think a lot of it is training your brain to say, okay, I'm not going to allow this to control me.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any other, like, strategies you can think of?
I mean, you could take Jesus's words literally, just chop off your hand, gouge out your eyes. I was born with four eyes and just saw this eye's causing me to sin, gotta gouge it out. But I mean, I guess a more, you know, real answer. I think just being completely open and transparent, you know, especially like if you're married, you know, for myself, like my wife has access to everything.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's like, you know, Facebook Messenger, someone messages me, she gets it on her phone. Hmm. Just anything. I just want to be completely above reproach. It's not an issue of trust. It's just, I don't want to be in a situation where I could fall into that and then have that kind of secrecy. So, you know, just being open and transparent. I mean, if if you're married, you know, what do we have to hide from our spouses? Mm-hmm. So
I'm going to use that to my advantage.
But see, a lot of people might look at you and be like, you know, oh, that's ridiculous, you know. Yeah. And I think I mentioned it, and I'm going to mention it in the message this Sunday, that, you know, when you become married, you don't lose your individuality. I think a lot of people feel like, well, I'm just going to lose myself, and I don't want my identity wrapped up in that person. It's like, you don't lose. Yeah. Two become one. Yes, two become one. Yes. Two parts to a whole. But you don't lose your individuality, but you do lose your, and give up. You don't lose it. You give up willingly your autonomy. Mm-hmm. You're not autonomous anymore. Like, if you are one flesh, it shouldn't matter if she gets your text. There's no privacy there. And who needs to text you? You know, for a while, and culture changes, it was like, I didn't want women texting me at all. Mm-hmm. And some people do that. But then, like, in the nature of the job, like, I used to be a worship pastor, worship pastor. It's like, come on, man, you just cannot function that way.
Yeah.
And so having this option is great. Like, we share an Apple ID, which is the worst thing ever.
Yeah. Yes.
Especially when you get a new phone, because all my texts start going to her phone, and her texts start going to my phone, and we're all confused and stuff like this. But we do that so that there's transparency. Mm-hmm. Like, we have the same Apple ID. Every app that I download, every website that I visit is also indexed on her phone. If I'm next to her, we have a multitasking on. So, like, my window will pop up with her window, you know, that she's looking at. Every website that's open on my phone is open. So it's like, it's impossible, you know, we're intertwined in that way. It costs a lot of frustration and causes a lot of that. People airdrop to me and they're like, oh, all I see is Aaron's phone. I'm like, no, it's my phone. It's not the same Apple ID. But it's good, because one time I was getting gas and my phone, it was early on, my phone was on the seat of the car, and my secretary texted me. And it was back when, like, the previews show up on the screen and stuff like that. In fact, I do have the previews show up on the screen. And she was asking me a question. It was like more of a personal question. And I got in, and then Aaron's like, why is your secretary texting you a personal question? And I was like, oh, never even occurred to me that it was a problem. And so then I had to go to her and be like, hey, I'd appreciate it if you only email me from now on and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, being open and transparent about what your wife or your husband are comfortable with, that's also good. Cause, like, you don't want to be like, you're getting all my texts now, you're getting all my messages now. And she's like, look, that's not a problem for me. What's a problem for me is maybe this area over here that you're keeping secret. You know, I want to know about that, you know?
Kind of last thing, which is, you know, kind of a broad question, but how does the contemporary issue of corn consumption and its potential impact on individuals and society relate to these teachings regarding guarding one's thoughts and actions in the realm of sexuality?
Go for it.
Makes it harder.
Yeah, that's a hard one. Yeah. Well, while you're thinking, so one, there's an episode of Friends. We watch Friends where we used to. I grew up on Friends. I know.
Yeah. I don't like it.
Yeah, a lot of people, you love it or you hate it. Mm. I mean, it was no Fresh Prince, but it was, you know, it was like a cultural moment, you know. I probably shouldn't have been growing up on Friends. I was like a kid, you know. I should have been watching that stuff. I remember one time there was like a joke and I laughed. I was like, ha, ha, ha. My dad turned to me and goes, do you know what that means? And I'm like, no, I don't know. I don't know what it means. Thank God. But there's an episode of Friends and you see this normalization of corn. And it was like this episode where they accidentally get the channel with all the explicit stuff on it. And they're all excited and it's on in the apartment and they're all laughing. And it's such a normalized thing that people just watch this. This is something that you do at your leisure, you know. It's that normalization in the mainstream that is just not a healthy thing. Yeah. That it's generally just accepted that, you know, well, yep, that's what guys and girls look at now. It's just a thing that happens. And, you know, you got to work it into your marriage and you got to regulate it. And, you know, like I said, you got to you know, try to tame it, you know. It's like, no, you got to train it away. And so the Bible, Christianity, is an upside down way of living. It always has been, always will be. The same way that you can walk to the marketplace at Ephesus and avert your eyes and not go into the many, many brothels that were available to you then, it's the same way we have to act now. Faithful to one woman, faithful to one man, not normalizing things that the world normalizes, whether that be, you know, stuff that's on the dark web or stuff that's in movies, you know. It's funny how we will call one thing art and then we'll call another thing smut, right? And then where's the line there? You know, some exploitation is just some beautiful art, you know, and the others is acceptable. I don't know how that even works. What was the question? Oh, yeah. I think I answered the question. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, and even within the realm of the industry, certain websites and stuff, they have pulled a lot of their library off because of the idea that these are, you know, not necessarily certified, whatever, you know, corn stars or whatever, where it was amateur or something. And that this is, I think it's been a couple of years now where they were like, we're going to make a conscious effort to only allow things that are people that are doing it for a living, not things that, you know, whether that's revenge or other things like that, that were getting posted on these kind of sites. And so it's the idea that, you know, even the industry itself realizes that there is a level of problematic stuff within it that they're going, okay, let's kind of curb this and try to, not that it's going away, but let's try to fix part of this problem with especially the, you know, the forced, you know, industry and things like that within. Yeah. So that's kind of, I mean, the fact that even the industry is looking at those things means that there is some level of problem, even from a worldly perspective.
Yeah. And there's a way to end this completely. It's just supply and demand, you know, mm-hmm. That's all it is. You know, there's I think it's the same for even, we talked about last week, the topic of abortion. Like, the way to end abortion is ultimately not to change the laws. It's to change the hearts. Mm-hmm. There's a law, I think I mentioned in Arkansas, I think it is, where you're not allowed to buy a pickle unless you first bounce it on the ground, right? There's weird laws all over the place, like a woman's not allowed to own land. It's like, we ignore those laws because we're above those laws. Like, those laws don't tell us what's righteous. Mm-hmm. Those laws are in place, and because our hearts aren't bent towards those things anymore, we're not going to obey them. Wouldn't it be awesome that our next generation goes, can you believe, because, you know, we always have something in mm-hmm. our past, like, can you believe the civil rights movement was just in the 60s? Mm-hmm. Like, can you ever imagine a world that was like that? That's us now. I would pray that our kids would go, can you believe that we were allowed as kids to pick up our phone and look at mm-hmm. stuff like that? Nobody wants to see that anymore because it's so wicked and terrible. I would pray that that would be just dry up the supply. And that takes us, really, it takes men. It takes yeah. men raising godly children and having the wherewithal and the sternness. And sometimes it's hard to do, to say, sorry, dude, I'm going to protect you. Even though society says, no, give him a phone. No, I'm going to protect you. Even though society says, let him go see Deadpool, even though there's nudity in it. And it's like, no, I'm going to protect you. You know, the first thing that I was ever introduced to in this category was Total Recall. Mm-hmm. And it was completely fake, you know, but there was a nude scene in Total Recall. And like, that is forever seared in my brain. And for a kid that age, it changes things. You know, we think it's not a big deal, but it's a huge deal. And so it's just going to take strong men, you know, doing what it takes.
All right. Well, that kind of wraps up that. This Sunday, we are talking about divorce. So that'll be a interesting conversation.
And I very carefully used my words during this podcast to avoid divorce. Mm. I'm kidding. I don't know.
But yeah, so that's coming up tomorrow. And I'm sure the conversation will not be necessarily what you think. You know.
Yeah.
So don't be scared to come.
yeah.
Yeah. But we're, you know, we're thankful for you guys tuning in. You know, we hope that this has been good for you, that, that our conversation has kind of enlightened you a little bit. And, you know, real quick before we end, you know, you talked about the beach, you know, so I really just wanted to say, I don't like sand. It's coarse.
Yes.
And rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere.
Okay, George Lucas. There's a line he actually wrote.
Oh man!
But yeah, so happy
number two.
Happy
right?
May the 4th.
Yeah, that was number two.
Go watch or, a Star Wars movie.
It definitely was number two.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Number two, if you know what I mean.
All right. I like them all. Yeah. So thanks for checking this out. We hope to see you tomorrow online or in person.
See ya.
Peace out.